Okay, this is October 20th, 2012, Vrindavan, Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 8. We'll be very happy with your broken English, it's just fine.
So you have to get yourself many things. So we are concerned here with the items we are coming many times. As far as the item of devotional service,
Here is a
classification. In the first 10 item, the 7th is residing in sacred place of living like Dwarka or Vrindavan. The 7th item, Srila Prabhupada has given as residing in sacred place of living like Dwarka or Vrindavan. Actually, in original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is written Dwarka di Nivasa. To reside in Dwarka and like places. And some slokas are quoted to establish the importance of residence in such places. For Dwarka, there is a sloka, Sambhatsaram Vasadmasan, Masam Masadmeva. Dwarka Vasina Sarve Nara Nadyas Chaturbhuja. If someone is residing in Dwarka for 6 months, or for 1 month, or even for half month, he will be the parsa of Vaikunth. But two phrases are given there, Dwarka Divaso, and in the shloka, the importance of Ganga is also given, or Gangadi Vasa. Srila Prabhupada has translated residing in sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka and Vrindavan. Actually, this is not exclusive for Vrindavan. Dwarka Adi. Adi cover wide range. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for this item, it is written Krishna Tirthe Vas. Srila Prabhupada has translated to reside in city where Krishna is present, or to reside in Krishna's temple. So see that this is wide range. So at least 3 places are listed in Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna is always present. Narada Muni spoke to Dhruva, go to Mathura where Krishna is always present. There is a description of Dwarka where Krishna is always present. If you will read the description of pilgrimage about Srirangam. It is written that Krishna is always present. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 29, Srirangakyam Mahapunyam Yatra Sannito Hari. Srirangam, about Srirangam. And about Mathura, canto 4, chapter 8, text 42. So in this way, this item covers large area, but Srila Prabhupada has listed what is the best. And this item again occurs in the number 35. There, Srila Prabhupada writes, one should live in sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. Actually, this item is counted as Tadiya Sevan. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the process of bhakti is counted. There the word has come, Tadiya Seva, or Tadiya, related to Krishna. Oh, four items are counted, Tulsi, Vaishnava, Bhagavat, or Mathura. Either Tadiya related to Krishna, four items is counted, they are listed there. Tulsi, Vaishnava, Mathura, and Bhagavata. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, actually Bhagavata sir, has not come. They are Shastra. And Shastra is defined as Bhakti Pratipadaka, the literature that establishes the importance of bhakti, that is Shastra. And actually Tadiya Sevan, for Tulsi we perceive, so for Bhagavat too, as Mukunda Prabhu was explaining, we offer flower, even Naivedya, foodstuff we offer to Bhagavat. But here, item A, to perceive Shastra. Srila Prabhupada, the best Shastra, has selected Srimad Bhagavat and Bhagavad Gita. And here, worship it in different way. To hear, to bow down, to offer flower. These all items are here. But listening, hearing is the best. So here, it is not exclusive, it is wide range in both terms. A Shastra can be many, and the method of worship can be many. The best method of worship is to hear, and best Shastra is Srimad Bhagavatam. And yet my brother, I actually went to Bhagavat, a Mathura residence, four things are Tadiya Sevan. So, as Mathura is to be served, as serving, Srunta Smrita Kritita Cha Vanchita Pekshita Gata Isprishta Srita Sevita Cha Mathura Vishta Dandrinam. Actually, about Mathura, it is said, if you are hearing about Mathura, you are remembering Mathura, you are glorifying Mathura, you are desiring Mathura, you are saying Mathura, you touch Mathura, so all are serving Mathura. The best is Sevita. To reside in Mathura is best. And the last, one should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. This is the one of the top five items. It is exclusively for jurisdiction of Mathura Vrindavan. And this is for residence only. Actually, I have not got the number, but in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu itself, it is said that Kurvan Vasam Brajeshara, somewhere it has come. So, as far as the residence is concerned, the first item we got, that is not exclusive. And second, it is not exclusive in the sense that we can hear about Mathura, we can worship Mathura, we can remember Mathura. But third one, is exclusively for residents. So this is about Mathura. And I was hearing a concern for in a second group, this is 23, one must hear about the Lord and his pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita or similar books. Actually, in Bhakti Rasam Sindhu, the word has come Sravanam. And Sravanam is defined as Nam Charit Guradi Nam Sruti. To hear about Nam, name, pastime and guna is Sravanam. So it is not exclusive for Srimad Bhagavatam. We can hear pastimes from Vishnu Purana, Garga Sandhita, similar literature. And second item, Tadiya Seva, Shastra. The word has come Shastra, or Shastra has defined as Bhakti Pratipadakam Grantham. The literature that is glorifying bhakti, devotional service. And the same principle will be applied in sevanam. Just to offer flower to Buddha, to hear the Buddha, or offer ourselves, it is sevanam. And the last is, one should relish the pleasure of Bhagavad reading among devotees and not among outsiders. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the word is Atha Sri Bhagavata Swate, to relish Srimad Bhagavatam. This is explained further, Srimad Bhagavata Thana Swato Rasikaisa. Then, with the Rasikai, Rasik means whose heart is full of taste, nectar, with those devotees to relish the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. As far as any slok is concerned, there is different meaning. Famous slok is Atmara. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained it 64 meaning. Well, there are many slokas, they have surface meaning, deeper meaning. To relish that meaning is Srimad Bhagavata Swata. So, two items. Third item about chanting. In second part, 13, one must perform Sankirtan. Or Sankirtan. Sankirtan is defined Nam Lila Guradi Nam Uchai Bhasa to Kirtana. To chant loudly name, pastime and quality is Sankirtan. Or example has been given for every Nam Kirtan, Lila Kirtan and Guna Kirtan. Our second item is one must chant. Srila Prabhupada has written, one must chant. Well, actually, this japa. Japa is defined. Mantrasya su laghu charo. Japa itya vidhiyate. In temple, sometimes Janardhan Prabhu tells big Hari Bhagavad. But here, Sulagu, very small recitation of mantra is japa. So this is chant, japa. So this can be chanting of name or any Gayatri mantra or other mantra. So it is not exclusive for a Hare Krishna mantra. But in the last five, one should chant the holy name of the Lord, Atnam Sankirtana. That is exclusively for chanting of holy name of the Lord. So I think some differences you can get. The first kirtan is many-sided it can be of Bhumi Kirtan or Lila Kirtan or Naam Kirtan. A chanting in concern, it may be chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, Gayatri mantra or other Vaishnava mantra. But the last is chanting of exclusively the holy name of the Lord. Oh, I think this is little difference between the three items. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. If anybody else here has deep things like that, do that. That was so, thank you. That was so helpful.
So you were looking at Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Nectar Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita.
I am sorry, Mataji. I have written Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have never read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu directly.
Ah, so,
but for task.
For this you were doing. That's very, very helpful. I'm going to note this, and when I teach this again in Mayapur, I will add this to my teaching. So I thought today is actually a pretty simple chapter. It's another chapter of lists. If you can pass around the paper if any questions on this chapter. So I didn't think we needed to do too much today. I want to go through the book that I brought the other day that I've written that I was passing around. That you all saw, that they have now at Ras Bihari Lal. You saw that book?
Yeah.
That's on the 10 offenses of on chanting. So that's if you're interested in something in depth. So we're just mentioning in a general way that any of these offenses to the deity can be counteracted by... Thank you. Any of the offenses to the deity can be counteracted by chanting the holy name. Of course, one should not offend the deity on purpose and then chant the holy name. Also, there's at least one place where Srila Prabhupada says that if you offend the deity, you should recite a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You should read a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So that's usually what I do if I offend my deities. I read a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yes?
If we do Dhamma Prabhupada, then also chanting in Dhamma
Prabhupada. We're getting there. Just 1 minute. But first we have a list of all the offenses to the deities, right? Srila Prabhupada gives a list of 32 offenses. Then he gives another list of 29. And then he mentions... Don't eat foodstuff cooked by a non-Vaishnava. Don't worship the deity before a non-devotee. Don't worship the Lord while seeing a non-devotee, and one should worship Ganesh. Don't step over the flowers. Don't take a vow in the name of God. So he mentions a few unlisted ones. So it's understood that the seva aparad is destroyed by chanting, but what about the nam aparad? Now, what's really interesting in this regard is if you read Madhurya Kadambini, where Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur discusses, and if you're really interested, I have charts and graphs on all this. It also refers to at what stage all the different anartas are destroyed. So basically, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that we have anartas from our past sins, we have anartas from our past piety, we have anartas that grow up in the process of performing bhakti, and all of those are destroyed by bhakti itself. Particularly by chanting. So then the anartas we have to deal with are the offenses. And of the offenses, there's also dhamma aparad. So there's dhamma aparad, seva aparad. And those are destroyed by chanting. So that leaves us just with nama aparad. Now how do we destroy nama aparad? Now the ultimate way is to chant. But they'll say to chant constantly. That means to chant all day. 100 rounds, 190 rounds a day, chant all of the time. There's also specific ways of countering them. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Harinam Chintamani, says that the key to eliminating all nam aparads is to chant with attention. that if you chant with attention, all the other aparads will vanish. And I see that that's for several reasons. First of all, whenever you do any kind of service with attention, Krishna reveals what you're doing wrong so you can fix it. So if you're offending Vaishnavas, you might not realize you're offending Vaishnavas. You might say, well, that's very easy to know whether I've offended a Vaishnava or not. Well, no, it's not. With some of these seva aparads, you know, one should not be charitable to beggars before the deity. That's a pretty easy thing to see if you're doing it or not. But blaspheming devotees may not be that easy to see. First of all, I know many, many devotees who think that criticizing others is part of their service. Now, sometimes it might be. If you're a parent, if you're a teacher, you're a guru, you're a manager, you sometimes do need to criticize others. That is part of your service. If you never criticize the person you're responsible for, then you're negligent. Just like I've criticized some of you that never ask any questions and never write down any questions. I say you should have questions. But that's my duty. It's not that I just walk up to some devotee in the temple and just say, you know, why aren't you asking questions in the Bhagavatam class? But when someone's actually my student, then I have some responsibility to correct them. Or if I see somebody falling asleep, I say, get up. Stand up, get some air. So that's my duty. Again, it's
hearing,
that's fine. That's my duty. Now, I don't go to the temple during japa time and see anybody sleeping and say, hey, wake up. But when someone's my student, it becomes my responsibility. And if I don't do that, then I'm not doing my service properly. Prabhupada gives that story of the boy who was raised by his aunt. You know that story? And she let him do whatever he wanted, and then he grew up to be a thief. And right before he was going to be executed, he said, I want to say something to my auntie. And he bit her ear. She said, why did you do that? He said, because when I was a child, you never corrected me. So it's the duty of the guru has to correct the disciples. If the guru just says, yes, 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 very nice, very nice. One of my god sisters repainted the deities in Dallas before they were to be installed. And she used a kind of paint that didn't dry very quickly. And for the day of the installation, the paint was wet, it wasn't dry. Now there was time to install the deities. They had to take off all the old paint. It was a big mess. And Prabhupada found out who did it. He called her in and he yelled at her. He said, you are a nonsense and you will always remain a nonsense. So she has not always remained a nonsense, but. So my son-in-law's father, Shruti Kirti, talks about how Prabhupada got upset with him one time about something and said, ah, when you are 80, then you will be intelligent. So he says he takes this as a benediction, that if he lives to be 80, he'll become intelligent. But Prabhupada was. So that's there. So sometimes we may have a duty to criticize someone and correct somebody. It's actually our duty. But if it's not our duty, then anything else is aparad. But this is not easy to see. It's not easy to see. I was dealing with one devotee some time ago who was writing me, I don't even know this person, I think I met him one time, and he was writing me letters on the computer criticizing this devotee and that devotee and the other devotee. And I said, Prabhu, I really don't want to hear this. And then he said, but I have to do this. And I said, who has given you this as your service? You know, who authorized you to be correcting these people? He said, no, it is my service. I said, who's given you this service? Where did you get this service from? But he kept insisting. I said, at least, well, don't tell me about it anymore because it's not my service. So one should be very, very careful because this Vaishnava aparad, particularly, it's like a crazy elephant. So now we don't see crazy elephants much anymore. Most of us hardly ever see elephants. But elephants have a very... I don't know if there's any other animal in the animal kingdom that has this. So you know, among most mammals, the female of the species goes into heat where they're fertile. right? You'll notice. But the male is not usually like that. But among elephants, the male goes into a time of heat. It's, what is it called? Must. It's called must. And the male elephants, when they go into this must, they become crazy. And even if they're trained, they forget their training. Even if they're chained, they will break their chains. And all the other elephants will get out of the way of an elephant in must. The theory is that this allows, because normally the elephants are controlled by the older males, but when a young male is in must, the older male will get out of the way and let the young elephant mate with the females. But an elephant in must is actually crazy. So we, you know, nowadays we don't see wild elephants. What they do now, if there's a trained male elephant, as soon as he starts showing signs of going into must, because it's not a regular thing, then they remove all food and water for a couple of days, and it stops it. But otherwise, they have to retrain the elephant, and the elephant can even kill its trainer. Normally, elephants are very kind to their trainers. They have a close relationship. But when an elephant is in must, it can even kill its trainer. And they all have to be completely retrained. So, when this was written, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying it was like a mad elephant, that was a society where they actually saw mad elephants. You know, there were wild elephants in the jungle, and they would see these young male elephants, young bull elephants, go into must and destroy everything. So this Vaishnava apparatus is like that. You can have your nice bhakti garden, and you can be doing all the angas of devotional service and taking such nice care, and this crazy elephant comes, and nobody can stop him, and everything's finished. But when you're chanting with attention, Krishna will give you the intelligence to know, oh, I'm offending a devotee, let me be quiet. When you're chanting with attention, you will get the intelligence. You'll start to say something offensive, and Krishna in the heart will reveal, Gyanadipenabhashvata, oh, you're about to offend it, and you go, and you'll stop, and you won't do it. But if you're not chanting with attention, you won't even know. I've seen so many devotees, including me, you know, I've offended so many devotees, I'm not just talking about other people. It's so easy to offend devotees and not even know you're doing it. Or think you're doing it for some higher purpose and think it's your service and something like that. So be very, very careful that if you have to correct others, be careful that it really is your service, and be careful that you're correcting only within your service. Only within your service. Even any of you, I can't correct you outside of this classroom. You follow? So if you're sleeping in the class, I can say, stop sleeping and stand up. But if you're sleeping in the temple during Bhagavatam class, I can't say anything to you. Because that's outside the range of my service. Does this make sense to everybody? Yes?
So, yeah, sometimes because we hear about how dangerous of committing this original opera, like as you said, to avoid criticizing other devotees, so because of that, we try to prevent, like, giving advice to devotees, just as, for example, we see, even see some younger devotees, junior devotees, but they sleep in the class, we will not correct them. But is it a good way to... Should we try to help each other?
Only if it's your service. So this relates to the austerities of speech. So you haven't learned that yet in your Bhagavad Gita. You haven't gotten there yet in Bhagavad Gita. You'll do that with Bhaktivinoda Maharaj. But the austerities of speech are truthful, pleasing, the words are not agitating to others, beneficial and based on the Vedas. So they have, the most important of all those is what? What's the most important?
True.
No.
Pleasing.
No.
Beneficial.
If I tell you something true, like if I say there's a tree outside, that's true. But that doesn't help you. So what? So there's a tree outside. Who cares? Or if I say to you, oh, very ugly baby you have. So that may be true. I once knew a lady, a devotee lady, who had a very ugly baby. He looked like a little pig, little nose like this, looked like a pig. But if I went to this mother and I said, oh, your baby looks like a little pig. So that was true, but it's not beneficial. And even based on the Vedas, so if somebody's coming to you, oh, my wife is always fighting with me, and you say, okay, let me read you from the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, fishes, I am the shark, of innumerable things. He says, well, how is this going to help me with my wife? So just reciting the Vedas and it being truthful isn't enough. It has to help people. Speaking should be helpful to people. And how do you know you're going to help people? Pleasing means the content should be pleasing. That's actually the least important, because sometimes you have to give people bad news. But even that, in former ages, if people brought bad news, they were often executed. That will stop you from criticizing others. You're going to execute the bringer of bad news. And not agitating to others means you use present language. You don't, like, use swear words. So it has to be helpful to others. So how do you know if it's going to help others? Well, one of the items, one of the 64 items, let's see if we can find where it is. One of the 64 items had to do with not giving people more than they could accept. That's also one of the 10 offenses. One of the 10 offenses is to preach the glories of the name to the faithless. So basically, to instruct people above their ability to hear. Now, how do you know that someone is willing to hear you? They ask you. Even if they ask you, you can't always tell. I've had people ask me and they didn't really want to know. Does that happen to you? Has that ever happened to you? Somebody comes and says, please tell me what my problem is. And you tell them and then they get angry. Does this happen to you? Happens to me sometimes. So just asking is not enough. I had one of my friends, actually, who said, Ormila, what's my biggest problem? And I already had a lot of experience with this lady. So I said, you don't have any problems. And she kept asking me, what is my biggest problem? I said, really, you don't have any problem. And she kept asking and asking and asking. And I finally just said, all right. I said, you really don't have any big problems. You only have little problems. But, you know, this is a very small problem. But this is what it is. And she was so angry. You know, for the next month, she was writing me emails, like 5 emails a day, and calling me 5 times a day. How dare you say I have this problem? Yeah. So just because somebody asks, and just because somebody's your friend, doesn't mean that they're willing to hear.
If they respect you.
If they respect you. What I see is you have to enter into a kind of contract. So just like here in this class, we've all entered into a kind of contract. I'm assuming that if you're sitting there and I'm sitting here, that you're willing to hear from me. That's my assumption. And if you're not, you can choose to leave. Of course, when you're talking to a group, it's very nice because everybody can think you're not talking to them. So when you're preaching to a group, you can say much heavier things than you can when you're speaking to an individual. I can say very strong things when I'm speaking to a group, because each person can think, oh, I know somebody who really should hear this. I will take this recording and I will, you know, play it for my sister or something like that. Oh, yes, it's that person. They really should hear this. So it's very easy, because even if I'm looking at all of you, you're thinking, well, she's not talking to me. And if you're talking to an individual, you really have to be very careful that you have a clear contract with that individual, that they are willing to accept what you have to say. And I think that's mostly based on two things. They have to trust that you know what you're talking about. And they have to trust that you care about them as a person, that you're not trying to hurt them. Because if I know, but I don't care, I can use my knowledge to hurt you. And if I care, but I don't know, I can be giving you bad information. So whenever we are correcting or criticizing or finding some fault in somebody, we should really make sure that it is our service to do that, that the other person has a relationship with us where they are willing to hear our corrections of them, or that is our business. It has to be our business in some way. And if someone's not willing to hear, we're simply causing a disturbance. Not offending devotees, Prabhupada would sometimes say, don't criticize Jesus or Muhammad also. Even though they're preaching something lower, we don't want to criticize them. Yeah, sure.
What if it's like a really serious problem, like they're doing something really bad, it's disturbing the temple or community, can you go to someone else to get them talking?
Yes. Then that's also your service. So it's your service as a member of a community, if you see something going wrong, to tell the person who has the responsibility to deal with it. If you have a relationship with the person, you might go to them directly first. If you don't have any relationship with the person, then you just go to the authority. So if I see somebody doing something wrong and I have a relationship with that person, then I'm first going to go to them and say, oh, you know, my dear Vaishnava, I'm concerned about this. But I have to have a relationship with them where they're willing to hear me. Otherwise, I'm committing an offense. I'm committing generally two offenses at least. Otherwise, yeah, I go to the authorities. This actually happened to me about a year ago. So some devotee, Krishna Das, we'll call him, came to me and said, oh, so-and-so devotee, you know, Krishna Maharaj, we'll call him, has come to my temple and is preaching such and such nonsense. So I first went to that. I didn't really have a relationship with that Maharaj. So I went to the sannyas minister and I went to a few other people on the GBC and I said, Krishna Das told me that Krishna Maharaj, these are just made up names, is saying such and such nonsense. So it's taken now 1 year of my doing this before, you know, it actually, they were able to contact everybody and ask them. And now Krishna Das is saying, oh no, I never said that. Okay. And like that.
Maybe it's just something is really wrong. You go to a few different people and no one's really willing to do anything about it.
Okay, well it's very simple. So if you see something wrong, in this case I heard that something's wrong. I didn't see it myself. And I just had to say I heard from someone. So I see something wrong. I see Krishna Das doing something wrong or preaching something wrong. So first I go to Krishna Das if I can. You know, if I don't know Krishna Das or if he's not going to listen to me, I can't go to him. So if that doesn't work, then I go to his authorities. I also have to decide, how serious is this?
Sure.
Is it really serious? Is it something that I really need to be concerned with at all? Then I can go to Krishna Das's authority. So I can go to the local temple president, or I can go to the sannyas minister, or, you know, I can go to... And if that person doesn't do anything, then I can go to the next higher authority. And I can go to the GBC representative. If that person doesn't do anything, then I can go to several members of the GBC, or I can go to the GBC executive body. I can go to the GBC body. If they don't do anything, I can go talk to Srila Prabhupada. And if he doesn't do anything, I can go talk to the deities. And if they don't do anything, then I just have to wait.
Sometimes suggest to ourselves, because I feel like
that's
happened
to me. Well, we're a servant, and if you think about Leela, so you know, there's this voice from the sky. I mean, first of all, Kamsa's terrorizing all the Vaishnavas. He's terrorizing all the Vaishnavas, and then there's this voice from the sky: the eighth child of your sister will kill you. Why eighth? Why not first? You know, so to have eight children, that's at least 8 years. Takes 9 months for a pregnancy. 8 years, you know, at least. And then there's some recovery time and so forth. They get married. And after the first child, they were in prison. So for 7 years, they're in prison. And then when Krishna appears, does Krishna immediately kill Kamsa? Is that the story?
No.
Krishna appears, Kamsa comes down to the prison cell, and Krishna kills him. I don't think that's the story, is it? But Krishna could have. Could Krishna have killed Kamsa immediately? Yes, but he doesn't. He tells Vasudeva, take me to Gokula. Then he goes to Gokula. How long does Krishna stay in Vrindavan? Some say 11, some say 16. But even if we want to say 11 years, so then there was 8 years plus 11, that's 19 years. It was 16 years, then it's another 24 years. So 19 years or 24 years, depending on whether Krishna stays in Vrindavan, 11 years or 16 years. That's a long time. And Kamsa was doing trouble before then. It wasn't that he started his trouble on the marriage date of Vasudeva and Devaki. So he was doing trouble before then. So we're talking, you know, over 20 years, maybe somewhere between 20 to 30 years that Kamsa was doing this trouble before Krishna dealt with it, before Krishna killed him. Why did Krishna wait so long? I don't know. You'll have to discuss it with him and ask him why he doesn't do things immediately when you want him to. You know, but that's the mood of the devotees, is to wait. Just like these kings that were imprisoned by Jarasandha also. You know, they complained to Krishna. They said, Krishna, you're on the planet. There shouldn't be any adharma. But Jarasandha is doing this adharma. And we're your devotees. We shouldn't have any karma. So why, if we don't have any karma, and if you're here to finish adharma, that was their reasoning, come and save us. Krishna said, yes. But then he didn't come right away. He went to Hastinapur. And he went to Hastinapur with his whole family. And Krishna doesn't have just one wife and one son and one daughter. And he doesn't travel by plane. You know, he had a big family. And the family had, the servants came, you know, the washer ladies and the teachers. And it was a lot of people. And they were traveling by ox cart and by horses. And the queens were carried by foot and in palanquin. So how long did it take them to get to Hastinapur? At least a month or two, right? And of course they had to pack and get ready. That didn't happen in one day for all those people. Then they get to Hastinapur and they're staying there for a while and talking about this and that. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira sends out his brothers to conquer all the directions. They were gone for 1 year. No, that's much later. So they came back and they said, okay, everybody surrendered except for Jarasandha. Then they went to fight with Jarasandha, and Bhima was fighting Jarasandha for how long? Yeah, 1 month. 1 month. So you have to figure 1 year the brothers are going out, and then 1 month they're fighting with Jarasandha, at least 2 months to get to Hastinapur. So it's at least 1 year and 3 months. It's probably closer to 1 year and 6 months. Between the time Krishna tells the messenger, yes, tell the kings I'm coming, and the time he actually comes. The time they're actually free. So that, you say, oh, that's not a long time. But if you're in prison, that might seem like a very long time. So Krishna does things in his own time. We should be thankful because, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm a nonsense. I'm a big nonsense. And if as soon as I do one nonsense thing, Krishna throws me out, where will I be? So why does Krishna take so long to deal with nonsenses? Maybe to give them a time to rectify. I've offended so many devotees. I mean, I could give you a whole list of all the offenses I've committed. We'd be very bored. But Krishna is giving me time, you understand? So I'm sure somebody's gone to Krishna and say, take that Urmila and throw her out. But Krishna didn't do that immediately. Thank you, Krishna. So he's giving me time to fix myself. So one has to be patient. We're a servant. And let Krishna act in his own time, in his own way. Yes, did you have a question? Yes?
Okay, system. Religious system, big system.
Big system.
Only Kamsa.
Yes. He was doing so many things.
Yeah, that's so much time.
So he took all that time. But he could have killed Kamsa right away if he wanted to, is my point. That's possible. Okay, so anyway, this also applies to other religions, not to criticize people in other religions, even if they're a lower religion. To consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. When I was writing these articles about the offenses, this was the most difficult offense. It was the one I wrote about last. It took me 1.5 years of research and asking people to be able to write about this offense. The reason is that the Sanskrit is ambiguous. Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that this offense is to think there's a difference between Krishna and Shiva. So here Prabhupada is saying the offense is to say that there is no difference, and Sanatana Goswami says the offense is to think there is a difference. If you do, we will have other members of the class coming in. They come. You can open the windows. But the door, we will have two varieties of additional students.
Do you want to cancel?
If we have the windows open, that'll do it. We can have those windows open too. But yeah, the doors are dangerous. As it is, the monkeys and the cows are always trying to find out if there's any food in here for them. Right. So the other meaning that Prabhupada gives of this offense is to see a difference, he gives us in the second canto of Bhagavatam, to think there's a difference between Krishna and his name. So the second offense can mean thinking there's a difference between Krishna and his name. Yes? Oh, it's okay. To denigrate demigods like Lord Shiva, or to think you can chant Kali Kali and you're chanting the name of Krishna. Now, what's really tricky about this offense also in terms of the demigods is that all the names of the demigods are also names of Krishna. Like Indra means chief. It's a name for Krishna. Or in the Ishopanishad, what's Krishna called at the end of the Ishopanishad?
Okay.
No. That's with an A.
Anirudha?
Don't guess. At the end of the Ishopanishad, I think it's mantra 17. What is Krishna called? 16, 17. And Prabhupada translated, "Oh my Lord," as powerful as... Oh my Lord, powerful as... Didn't you just set fire? What's the Sanskrit word in that mantra?
Agni.
Agni. Krishna's being called Agni. Prabhupada's translating it as powerful as fire. So when is a name... Oh, also this offense can mean to distinguish between names of God, to say one name of God is better than another name of God. But we do say that one name of God is better than another name of God. We say 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to 3 names of Rama, and 3 names of Rama is equal to 1 name of Krishna. So I had to ask the question, equal in what? And it seemed it was equal in potency. But this offense can also mean to distinguish between names of God. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says we should distinguish between the secondary names and the primary names. So this offense is very confusing. Because on the one hand it says, make sure that you see a difference between the names of Krishna and the names of the demigods. And then Sanatana Goswami says, this offense means don't see any difference between the name of Krishna and the name of Lord Shiva. And then Prabhupada will say, this offense means to say, this name of God is better than this name of God. Another place he'll say, this name of God is better than this name of God. Ah. So, if you want, you can read my whole article on this offense, but it's definitely quite tricky. I concluded that what name of God you're using depends on your mentality. So like the Christians can go to their church and say, oh my Lord, oh my Lord, oh my Lord. And the gopis are wandering through the forest saying, hey, not, hey, not. But the gopis are not saying, oh, Lord, the way the Christians are saying, oh, Lord. It's a different meaning. And one person may be calling Agni to the demigod, another person is calling Agni to Krishna. And just like Atri Muni. Atri Muni was just calling for God. And he was calling for Bhagavan. And Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma, they all came. Who do you want? He says, I don't know. So they all came, and each of them became one of his sons. But when Gajendra was praying, although he was just also saying Bhagavan, all the demigods knew he's calling only for Vishnu. They didn't come. They knew he's not calling me. So a lot of it depends on what's going on in your heart. We started very late, so just a 5-minute break. Just stretch, get some air. Drink some water, just 5 minutes.